This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. All right, so Mariners last night get a 5-0 victory as they continue to at least get some help. You know, they're way behind, 8.5 games behind. They're not going to catch anybody, but at least they get the games and get the victory. So that was one thing that gets going as far as, you know, they get a, with a pit, with really the bullpen kind of came in there and did some good stuff. As far as the Seahawks, Michael Kendricks was signing, a linebacker who was already pleaded guilty to, a very bad charge of insider trading, but at least they get a linebacker. Seven guys on the injured list right now who did not practice yesterday, and that includes Trey Flowers. Flowers. That includes Bobby Wagner. It includes KJ Wright. I mean, it's a pretty bad list right now. They did pick up Amara Darbo, who's going to be out for the season. And so he had surgery, but at least they'll have him available for next season if they wish. And so that's one thing that was kind of interesting. And, you know, paid him about $578,000. College football scores. Georgia, third-ranked team in the nation, leading MTSU's 21-0. Oklahoma tied with Iowa State 10-10. Clemson over Georgia Southern 7-0. Syracuse leads Florida State 3-0. That's in the second period. Nebraska is trailing Troy. How about that one? 10-0 in the second period. Miami over Toledo 14-0. Penn State 21. Kent State 7. Those are some of the main scores of some of the top teams, and that is the headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, how are you on this football Saturday?
John, doing just fine. How you doing?
Doing well. Getting ready to head to Chicago and see the Bears and see the Seahawks. And, man, that injury list, seven guys on it. I know when we were kind of talking last week, we had negative vibes. But, boy, if that injury list comes through, Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright, D.J. Fluker and Trey Flowers, if they're all going to be out, this is going to be a tough one to try to get a victory.
Well, especially Wagner, obviously. He's the new name, and it's 2 days of practice, not just missing one practice, missing 2 days of practice with a groin issue goes a long way towards explaining the Kendricks signing even. And, yeah, no question about it. I thought that it was going to be a tough one anyway, like I think all their road games are going to be this year. But if all those guys are out, it's going to be very difficult for the Seahawks to win.
Yeah, no doubt. So we'll find out sometime a little after noon who's in and who's out and what it looks like, who's going to be game time decisions. Team's going to fly to Chicago today. And as you look back in game one, you know, then what things do you see needing to be improved the most?
Well, I mean, I thought that, look, it was a game where the Seahawks managed 24 points and Russell Wilson and the offense had three opportunities in the fourth quarter to mount a winning drive and didn't do it, but still scored 24 points, which normally in this league should be enough. They intercepted Case Keenum three times, which is, again, you know, normally enough. You know, Frank Clark had a sack. Otherwise, there was no pressuring on the defensive side of things. Obviously, Shaquem Griffin, who wasn't supposed to be a starter, didn't look like a starter. He looked like a kind of a lost fifth-round draft pick out there, which also explains some of their moves at linebacker. Trey Flowers had a decent game, but what struck me was, and it was obvious, you know, that it was going to happen, and it happened towards the end of last year, but you saw teams throwing to the right against the Seahawks, and it just reminded you that for all those years that they had the Legion of Boom and Richard Sherman, they never would go to the right side, and they don't have him anymore. So the secondary is still a work in progress. I was impressed by Earl Thomas's return, and his first interception was pure Earl Thomas. Was an all-pro play where he read the quarterback, jumped the route immediately, had a great interception. But I thought defensively this team has hung their hat on their defense over the years. The Super Bowl team, of course, and that great run of being an elite defense is how they built this team. And Pete Carroll's a defensive coach. They gave up nearly 500 yards to a very average quarterback in Case Keenum, who looked very much like the backup that he used to be for all those years. Nearly 500 yards in total offense given up. That jumped out at me more than anything. I think offensively, you know, when Doug Baldwin went out, you knew it was going to be a challenge for Russell Wilson, and it was. I thought the offensive line, you know, I mean, just did not perform very impressively. Von Miller, you knew he was going to be a big factor, and he was, but unable to get a running game going. So really the thing about it was there they were in the fourth quarter with a chance to win, and you know, you're paying your quarterback $20+ million, and he has come through in those circumstances, and it's probably unfair to expect him to every time, but that's exactly what you expect when you pay a big-time quarterback that money. You expect the Aaron Rodgers results, and the Seahawks didn't produce him. So I thought it was a very disappointing loss in a game they could have won, in a game that I didn't think they would win, but certainly had a chance to win because of Denver's sloppy play, but definitely didn't get it done at the end of the day. And again, what jumped out at me more than anything is the fact that this is a team whose defense is not nearly as strong as it's been in the past, and may not even be the best unit on the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing that I think is going to be very concerning is that they need to find a way to just get better with the defense, because again, the way I look at it, and I just break it down just based on top quarterbacks, and I think we all agree that Russell Wilson's a top quality quarterback. You know, as long as you give him a chance with 23 points allowed on defense, then you have a chance to win. If you give up 27, right, 28 points, just like they gave up 27 to Denver, you're not going to win. You're going to have a losing season. Happened to Drew Brees, happened to Matt Ryan, happened to Cam Newton. That's the definitive line. And if this is a 27-point defense, I still think it's better than that, but it's got to prove it, then this could be a very troubling season.
Well, it's definitely got to prove it, and I'm not sure that it's better than that. I mean, you know, injuries are the X factor that you try and factor in, but you can't. I mean, you just don't know who's going to be hurt. But, they now have a defense with a couple of superstars on it as opposed to one with a lot of superstars on it. So when you lose one of them, it definitely hurts a whole lot more. And obviously the KJ Wright loss was pretty dramatic. When you look at the difference in play from that side, if you lose Bobby Wagner, I mean, wow. And have both those guys out, you have your Earl Thomas as your one elite defensive player on the field. When it comes right down to it, unless Frank Clark is going to bounce back and have a big game, or one of the guys in the middle of that interior defensive line are going to produce the way they haven't, you're down to one elite player on defense, and it's a free safety. So it's definitely a challenging times, and you know, you hope that it's fortunate they're playing the Bears, but you know, the Bears showed signs of life in the first half of their game against the Packers. Now the question is, and I know Dave Wyman thinks that this will be a factor, that they're not going to be able to overcome the hangover of that loss to the Packers, where Aaron Rodgers came back and won it at Lambeau Field. I'm not so sure that'll be the case. I think the Bears probably take more positive than negative out of that game, although Trubisky really did have a tale of two halves, a productive first half and an unproductive second half, and still looks like a young quarterback who's capable of missing some plays. So turnovers are going to be a very big factor to keep the Seahawks in the game. Turnovers is what kept them in the game against Denver, and they'll hope that can be the case against the Bears.
Mm-hmm, no doubt. And so that's going to be the big challenge. And, you just hope from Brian Schottenheimer's standpoint, he runs the football, because that's what he was brought in here to do. And, and they need to run it successfully. I mean, it didn't. What was your thoughts on Rashad Penny?
He looked a little lost as well. I think, from a rookie standpoint, training camp is exceedingly important at this point in time. Preseason games for rookies are important because you have so little practice time, the more two-a-days, things like that. When you have a rookie who misses virtually all of the preseason games and a big chunk of training camp, he's going to be way behind. And that was my take on him. He looked like he was way behind. I know that Pete Carroll, as much as he'll criticize a player, didn't really criticize him, but made it pretty clear that Chris Carson's the number one back. And you know, look, I've maintained, John, all offseason that you draft a running back in the first round, you expect him to be a big factor. You expect any first-round pick to be a big factor. If he's just going to be a backup running back who's not going to be splitting the duties or actually being the prime back, you got to question the draft pick. So I'm not doing that after 1 week, understand, because it just was 1 week and with an excuse that he didn't have much practice time. But I'm expecting much bigger things from him this year.
Yeah, no question, and that's what is definitely going to be needed. They've got to have production out of him, but they've got to get the running game going. That's why, and that's the thing. It's like sometimes it's not bad to not rush a quarterback. I mean, rush a running back, or even rush a young quarterback. I mean, I thought that they rushed Mitch Trubisky last year in Chicago at quarterback, but these things sort itself out, and you can't just automatically give the job up to somebody who hasn't earned it yet. And right now, Rashad Penny hasn't earned it. And I figured that he was going to have some difficulty not having any preseason games in the last three games in being able to pick up the pace of the game and the speed of the game. I think that was a problem for him.
Definitely was a problem. And again, it's an it's a viable excuse for a rookie, but not for a veteran. But it's not going to last much longer. I mean, he's got to be productive.
No doubt. And so
if they're going to be good.
Mm-hmm. So now college football wise, what's capturing your eyes so far as what you expect today?
Well, I'm looking forward to the Husky game, obviously. I think that's a huge challenge for Washington. They're playing a Utah team that, you know, it's hard to necessarily get a handle on them this year. They've played Weber State and I think Northern Illinois, but in both cases, their defense, which was thought to be their strong suit, shut them down. They've been very good against Washington. Washington needed a heroic, I think it was a punt return last year from Dante Pettis to beat them 33-30. The year before was also a touchdown game. It's a night game in Utah. They're calling it a blackout. They've been pointing towards it for the entire year. They really feel like they're close to Washington. It's a top 10 team from their standpoint coming in. The Huskies have shown a surprising inability to run the ball in their first two games, which is something that's going to be concerning moving forward. And it's not something you can just blame on having their starting left tackle injured. It's just they got an experience back. They got the all-time leading rusher in Washington history running the football for them. So I think Washington needs to get their running game going or they're going to be in trouble tonight, even though they're a 4-point favorite against Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And, Washington State, they got an interesting game against Eastern Washington, a team that beat them the last time they played them. Mike Leach has had first half of the year stumbles before, usually in the first game. Eastern is 2-0. They got a pretty good offense, even though they're an FCS school, and Washington State should be strong in this game. It's definitely a challenge for them. And then in the Pac-12, I think that, the big early story is your boy Herm Edwards at Arizona State. Who
go figure that one
2-0.
Out. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's early. So, I mean, you don't want to get too carried away with it yet, but it's a great start. They knocked off Michigan State last week. They're ranked. They got an interesting challenge this week. San Diego State is not an elite team, but they're a team that's been in bowl games the last couple of years. The game is in San Diego, so that's a challenge for them. And then Texas and USC is an interesting game as well. The rematch of Pete Carroll's most infamous national championship loss. SC has dropped the game last week. It's a question as to how good they are. So that's going to be an interesting matchup as well. And then nationally, I think the Ohio State TCU matchup is a very interesting ball game. It's in Arlington, Texas, so it's nominally a home game for TCU. They're a quality team, a quality offensive team. So that'll be an interesting game as well. Boise State, Oklahoma State's a good game. Two ranked teams playing. So you got some good matchups today.
Yeah, that's going to be kind of fun. So getting into the season and also kind of getting into the conference season, too. I think that's good because, I mean, everybody has their three or four puffy games that they have. Although, you know, the Huskies did put that challenge on by going with a difficult game against Auburn on the road. That was, and didn't pull it off. And so now that puts the pressure on. They've got to do well in this conference.
Well, Utah, like I said, is likely the favorite in the South over USC and those guys, and this is a big game. I mean, they're obviously going to keep an eye on the Auburn-LSU game. Auburn's a 10-point favorite in that game. If Washington's harboring any hopes of being in the bowl championship series, they need Auburn to be very, very good. They need that loss to not be a bad loss, and if Auburn winds up being a 500 team or something like that, which is possible in the SEC, their hopes will be dashed, but you got to take care of their business first. And running the ball will be a big key today against Utah in a game that I think is going to be pretty low scoring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have to think it is because, again, that's the one thing that you really cling on with the Chris Peterson team. His team is so good on defense.
They sure have been. They sure have been. And they were tough. They were tough against Auburn, so I would expect their defense to stand up.
No, you kind of like what you see there. So then, of course, I know in the National Football League, what's your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers? He did practice today. They're saying he's questionable. It'll be a game-time decision. I think he's going to play.
Well, I do, too. And, what can you say about him? I mean, I keep going back to the one play which should have been intercepted that wasn't, that should have stopped this comeback. We would have said, hey, Aaron Rodgers almost, it struck me that had the Bears intercepted that tip pass when it was 23-17 and right before the pass to Cobb and the touchdown that got the Packers to win and the Bears had run out the clock, how different would the story be? And the answer is it'd be different, but not that different. Rodgers would have led them to two fourth-quarter touchdowns, would have been a tip pass that was intercepted. It still would have been a great comeback, and, it just kind of shows that he's sort of bulletproof. I mean, the Vikings are a big rival. Obviously, this is an important division game for the Packers. The Vikings defense, it's just week one, but they were tough on San Francisco. They handed Jimmy Garoppolo his first loss. They've got all their horses going. So I think it's going to be a terrific game, one of a bunch of really good games on the schedule. But it'll be a terrific game because the nature of that rivalry, people don't know sometimes out in this part of the country how intense that Packer-Viking rivalry is. It is. And I do think Rodgers is going to play as well.
Mm-hmm. And boy, that's going to make for just some exciting football and all that. And your thoughts on New England-Jacksonville?
The repeat of the championship game. I mean, Jacksonville beat the Giants on the road last week, and a lot of the story was, Blake Bortles, look at his average pedestrian numbers. Well, that's how they won last year. And Leonard Fournette didn't play a big chunk of that game, and it's tough to win on the road, as you know, John. And I think the Giants are going to be a little bit better than people think they're going to be this year. So I think that's going to be an interesting challenge. The Patriots had an interesting game. I mean, you know, Brady and company were rock solid in the first half, and the Texans, despite having a bad game from Deshaun Watson, and it was his first game back after injury, so understandable, got within a score at the end of it. So I wouldn't be surprised if Jacksonville gave him a big run and maybe even pulled off the victory in this one.
Mm-hmm, no doubt. So what's on the schedule for the Groz today?
Football, buddy. Mm-hmm. Football. And I'll work a little Mariners in as well as they play out the string.
Yep, that should be good. And so, Dave, enjoy this weekend, and I'll chat with you on Monday.
Thanks, John.
Okay, that's Dave Grosby, Bob Groz and Tom, weekdays 12 to 3 on 710 ESPN Seattle. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Well, what's going on with Nebraska? They're down to Troy 17-0. How about that amazing twist? 17-0, they're down. And, it's going to be a little bit scary if you're going to be then. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rashid in Bothell. Hey, Rashid.
Hey, good morning, Professor. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. First of all, thoughts and prayers with people on the East Coast in the path of Florence. I hope everybody's safe there.
I hope so. Yeah, that thing is just devastating. What, at one point it was only moving 2 miles an hour?
Yeah, it's just I hope they're safe. But, Professor, after looking at the injury report yesterday, I'm in a bad mood, so can I rant a little bit?
Yeah, today? You can. Sure, absolutely.
Okay. So my first peeve is that it's a copycat league, but you know, I think people copy bad moves more than the others. You are a big proponent of, like, they're changing coaches too often. And I look at Detroit, and that's, like, a bad mistake they made getting rid of Caldwell. I mean, 9-7, and they were in, like, three more one-score games and stuff. They could have easily been, like, 11-5 or 12-4 and stuff. And then you go and change it, and he brings a new culture. The players are not getting along. And you saw what a disaster that was. You know, Jets in their history, I don't think they've scored 31 points in one quarter. Like, I think that was the first time in their history they scored 31 points in one quarter. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like I was bummed. And the other thing, Professor, is you saw the Baltimore Cincinnati game, right?
Unfortunately, and, yeah.
Yes. And there's, you know how people think Belichick is great? And one thing he's great about is situational football. Now, Baltimore is driving down 11, and they get the ball, and they stop the clock at 59 seconds, and there's a 56-yard field goal attempt that they can make and, get three because they have the best kicker in the league who's already kicked a 55-yarder. And then they keep on going playing. They don't even score on their drive, and they don't play for the onside kick. So they had pretty much given up on the game even before it ended. And mm-hmm. that really, really bothered me that, like, this is one of 16 games that you're going to play. It's a division rival on the road. At least give your team a chance to win. I don't understand that. I was so mad that they should have gone for that field goal, and they would have made it, and then go for the onside kick. If you don't get it, then don't get it. But right. at least try.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think they, you know, teams outthink themselves, but I think that's the tough part, particularly when you know the quarterback isn't playing well. And say what you want, I mean, Flacco was great in week one. He was horrible last week, just absolutely horrible. And so you look at that and you go, whoa, what's going on there? But, I think they'll bounce back from it. I still think they're a team that, you know, is now going to still challenge for the division, still think they're good enough there. But, you know, Cincinnati's starting to come back. Say what you want.
And their defense. I was so impressed. And even this kid, Sean Williams, I know he got ejected in the first game, but he's a baller, mm-hmm. and I think they have a good team.
And, I mean, Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunbar, they're really good.
Oh, Carlos Dunlap was just like a beast, and AJ Green, and now Tyler Boyd is coming. Tyler Eifert is healthy.
They're one game away from getting Vontaze Burfict back.
Yes, so I'm actually, I don't know, I just hope they do well and like at least win one playoff game. I really feel bad for Marvin Lewis and stuff. He's a good coach, and
right.
it's about time that people start noticing that. But and last thing I want to rant about is a little bit, I don't want to be too critical. I know people have been hard on Russell Wilson, but there is a stat, Professor. Last five games with less, like 2 or 4 minutes left in the game, down one score, last five times the Russell Wilson has gotten the ball, Seattle is 0-5, including the last week in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, like, it should be at least 50%. Like, an elite quarterback, when given a chance, it would be he would win at least 2 of those 5 games and stuff. And I know it's, like, they missed a couple of kicks in the Atlanta game and in the Cardinals game and stuff, you know. So you can't, like, totally blame him, but... You know, I mean, it is a stat that he's
always. But again, here's the one to reconsider on that, because remember, the whole season last year they were minus 44 points in the first three quarters, minus 44 as far as the point differential. Then Russell, thanks to him, they get plus 78 in the fourth quarter. Plus 78, that's best in the league. All right, so now, and I still go back this, if you have a top quarterback, I mean, it's hard to overcome 27 points a game. That happened 3 years with Drew Brees. He went 7-9 3 years. And remember, Hall of Fame quarterback. You know, Matt Ryan, his running game ran away. They were giving up 27 points a game. He goes 4-12, 6-10. You can only overcome so much. I learned this from Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning basically said, if you have a defense that gives up 27 points, you then are forced to make more plays, and you have every possession so that you're trying a little bit too much, and you end up throwing interceptions, and you make mistakes. That's just the reality. So really, that's why they need the running game. They need the lead. They need to be able to play better. And you can't ask Russell to do everything. You can't ask a great quarterback to do everything. So that's really what it comes down to. Hey, Rasheed, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rich in Redmond. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Mr. Clayton.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I want to know, because clearly from the instant replay for that last touchdown in the fourth quarter that Denver scored, the foot was clearly out of bounds, and the initial ref called it incomplete. Then they went back and had a huddle, and all of a sudden it was overturned.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get that, since that ref had a clear call on it, and why that happened, and why Pete didn't challenge that.
No, good point. I mean, I thought that was what was different about that whole thing was that I was standing there watching Demaryius Thomas, and he was getting furious because, I mean, he thought it was going to go against him and not be able to get the call. And so because you could see there was doubt even in his mind, and he was the one who caught the pass. So that, I think, is concerning. But, and that's the thing. You have to have evidence to be able to overturn a call like that. And so I'm kind of baffled that wasn't the case.
I mean, that makes me wonder about the home field advantage and their streak and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't like to say that there's something going on with the referee league. But, I mean, other that, it's that or the people upstairs didn't get back to Pete in time with the replays to tell him to throw the flag. I mean, was there delays with that? Because I know there was a delay earlier when Pete tried to throw the flag out. He said he got it. He said he got the call late from upstairs.
Right.
So is there inadequacy with the upstairs review people?
No, I doubt it. I mean, I think, you know, he's got enough people on staff and enough people to communicate. But, you know, it was one that's kind of slipped away. Very strange. But, you hope they get better calls this week.
I mean, that was the game changer. I mean, we held him to no more scores. We would have won that game if that call had gone the way it should have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that... Unfortunately for them, it did not. And, there's so many things. I mean, you go back to the old thing that was, preached by Chuck Knox. There's 5 plays in any game that's going to determine which way the game is going to go. And you've got to win most of those plays. If you lose them, you're not going to win. And they lost them in this game. Hey, thank you for the phone call, Rich.
All right. Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
John, longtime fan, first time content.
Yeah, how about
that? How you doing? It was a good week.
Yeah, you had to feel good about it.
It was a good week. Trying not to get too overhyped here because I, first off, don't know how bad the Lions actually are. And I don't know how much of it was attributable to a first-time coach that really didn't have their team prepared to play, as opposed to how well the Jets played and how well the Jets looked. But that said, there's an awful lot of positives to take away from that game. First, I guess, with the defense. I know we've been talking about it, but we saw it on display. They are so much faster than they have been in years. I mean, they really look fast on defense, which is a good thing. The other thing that I was concerned about watching football all week was the nonsense as to if you blow too hard on a quarterback, you get a flag. The nice thing about the Jets is they don't get to the quarterback, so we're not going to have to worry about those
penalties
all year. Yeah, you have to hear
about it. No.
And then the offense, you know, the line looked awful good. Now, I don't know if that's just a comment on once Vic Bisaccia went out, they really had nothing else to rush the passer with because he did get to Darnold once. But, you know, they were able to run the ball. They gave a pretty clean pocket almost the entire game. You know, wasn't a bad performance. So the next 2 weeks are going to be good tests because...
Yeah, but I tell you, I still quite... that's what I wonder about it. I mean, it's great that Darnold's out there, but asking him to play three games in 10 days?
Yeah, I know. It's going to be tough, and it's going to be a good test. I think we'll get a good sense as to where the Jets are when they're going against two kind of contemporary, if you will, organizations with the Dolphins and the Browns. Both the Dolphins and Browns have some good pass rushers. So we'll see how good that offensive line really is and how good that scheme is really going to be because those two teams, at least if nothing more, can get to the quarterback. And these are also two teams kind of, you know, stuck in that building, rebuilding, not building, progression, digression situation. So they're kind of like peers in that regard. So it'll be interesting how the Jets stack up in these next 2 weeks. But, man, having to come on a Thursday night game, that's going to be tough.
That's
going to be tough.
Too much to ask. That's why you kind of wonder. It's like, you know, I guess you know, the excitement of coming out with Darnold. And, again, you know what I felt about Darnold. I thought he was the best quarterback in the draft, and so far all he's done is prove it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's had shoulders above everybody else's development, I think, at this point in time. But I think it's nothing more, man. You just got to love his demeanor and his deportment. I mean, bouncing back the way he did after that pick six, I mean, that takes some stones. And especially for a kid that's 21 years old and a young 21 at that, that was pretty impressive. So I think, okay, we're not going to win the Super Bowl this year, but there's an awful lot to like as to how they're progressing and going forward this year. And I think the plan is slowly starting to come into place. And there's an awful lot of good. They're still missing a couple of pieces, sure. But they're not as bad as people thought they were going to be. And
no,
you know, I think you got to give some of that credit to Todd Bowles as well as Mick Mulsey.
Well, Packers, you know, I like Todd Bowles. I really.
Yeah,
do.
I know you're a big Bowles fan.
Yeah. So,
but I will say that team was ready to play, and the Lions were not.
How did you like how bold they were after the game, saying, "Hey, we knew all their plays. We can see it on the field."
Yeah. So that obviously helps it make your team a lot faster. They know where everything's going. So, like I said, the next 2 weeks are going to be good tests, and I think we'll have a better idea as to where the Jets are after the next couple of weeks, but. Man, you know, there's an awful lot of positive takeaways from that Monday game.
Mm-hmm. No, I thought that was very good, and yeah, we'll see where they eventually go with the running game. But hey, you take one step. I mean, they won, and they won big, and they won big on the road, and they won big on the road with a rookie quarterback who is the youngest starting quarterback to open a season in the modern era.
Yeah, you know, and again, you gotta give McCray an awful lot of credit, but. You know, he's had some issues drafting, obviously.
Right.
But one thing you can just not deny is where he's been really good is picking up the secondary free agent market. I mean, Crowell, that was a gem that he picked up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, year after year, he's been stacking that lineup. with these 25-year-old guys going into their second contracts, and it's really been paying dividends. You know, hopefully they can, you know, do a little better drafting. I think they had a pretty good class this year, but yeah, they're building that roster. It was depleted, and they're building the back end up, which is a big help. And I think the most astonishing thing was their special teams, because special teams have been just abysmal for the last, well, since even before Westhoff left. And a lot of that was because the bottom of the lineup fell apart. And I think, you know, that was the most shocking thing to me, was how well the special teams played.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also a testament, is how they're building up the bottom of the roster, and they're starting to fill, you know, fill in the holes. Obviously not there yet. We'll find out where they're going to be, but it's only a good first step.
Well, at least for the first time, I mean, you could say some positive things to start the season. And, of course, there's hope with some of the good young players. And, you know, they did it without three starters healthy. They got, Curse back this week. And so we'll see where it goes. But, Jet, congratulations to a good start, and put the Prozac away for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, we're not going to put it too far away, but we'll still have it within arm's length. But because it can go awry real fast.
No question.
These are the Jets, John.
That's true.
But, hey, we'll take it one day at a time.
Okay. Sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. Fantastic. Couple of things. It's so nice to have the universe coming together here now, you know, with the Graz on the show, the Irish winning. There's just one last thing we've got to try to put together to hit that trifecta, Mr. Clayton.
And what is that?
You've got to go Irish.
That's not happening.
Well, we've been calling you for years, and we're not giving up on you yet, Mr. Clayton.
Well, when you start talking conference, then we might open renegotiations. I mean,
you're in a conference already, Mr. Clayton. The ACC.
That conference, you're in that conference that says independent right at the bottom of the.
We still have to play five games in conference.
Yeah, but most conferences you play eight or nine.
Well, no, we can't do that, Mr. Clayton. It's about the money, you know, the money. So, Mr. Clayton, the game's on at 11:30 today. So, are you there?
No, I'm not.
Well, you should watch it.
I got some errands to do.
You don't want to listen to Mike Tirico give his opening speech about the game?
Love Mike Tirico, but I'm on the air at that time.
Well, I know, but you can monitor things. You're a multitasking kind of guy.
Right.
Well, Mr. Clayton, all right. We'll continue this conversation for sure. The keys to the game today, Mr. Clayton, 5. The Irish will win. Their Irish defense is frighteningly good. They're at home.
Mm-hmm.
They've got better depth and talent. And they're going to turn Winbush loose today and not try to force him to play the way he can't really play.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, that Ball State game last week was a wake-up game. And they are going to wake up big time on their way to the national championship games, Mr. Clayton.
We'll scratch on that one. Irish, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
How can I follow that Irish Mickey? He's
it
so
is hard.
Silly.
That's why I gave you a commercial break to be able to do that.
Yeah, okay. You know what? I just thought of this because it's Pete Carroll's birthday today. Happy birthday to Pete. And it makes me wonder, though, how many more years has Pete Carroll has left in him?
Oh, I think with his energy, I mean, he's got several. I mean, look at Nick Saban. He just signed a contract extension. I mean, you had Dick LeBeau coaching into his 80s. I mean, so, no, I think that, if he does well, and it's hard to doubt him because, again, he knows how to build a franchise. He's did it in college. He's done it here. And so I still think he can get one more contract.
Okay. And one other thing here. Is it just me that the schedule makers put the Seahawks too much on the road because we don't do well in opening days on the road?
No, it could be, yeah. Because, I mean, it seems like, what, 80% of the games over the last several years, they've opened up in the road. Remember, they opened up in Cam Chancellor's year in St. Louis, and, you know, that can be tough, and it's hard to understand why. I guess what it comes down to is that they want to try to get some of the cold-weather teams to have their home games earlier so that you don't have as many cold-weather games at the end, but that puts Seattle, because at least you know it's reasonably mild compared to, say, Green Bay, Chicago, and some of the other places. But, yeah, it is unfair, and I honestly think, and this is not something I say that I just thought of here. I've been saying this for 2 or 3 years. They should find a way to have all these teams, you know, all teams at least split, home and away, right? You don't have two road games like that. I know that they've tried through the years to find a way to, you know, take as many and minimize three-game road trips, which are unfair to teams, you know, 3 straight weeks on the road. But I think that they need to find a way because what was it? I think. It was like 2016. It was Baltimore, Detroit. There was like 4 teams that had 2 road games, and like 3 of them didn't make the playoffs. So I think you're onto a good point there. And again, you know, it used to be a problem in the sense that, well, you had stadium inavailability because what you had was that, you know, you had to kind of go back and rely on baseball because, you know, they shared a baseball stadium. Well, that's not the case anymore. I mean, you know, what, the only one you really have is in Oakland. And that's going to be phased out.
Okay. And one last thing. I like to make a salute to the Seattle Storm in winning the WNBA championship. It hasn't been mentioned yet, so I want to mention that right now.
Oh, that's great. Good of you to do that because, again, it's so great that they've won their 3rd championship and they acted like championships. I'm glad that the ratings were great league-wide. All those things were very, very positive. Hey, Patrick, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Steve in Burien. Hey, Steve.
Hey, John. It's going to be interesting. After today, the 3-0 Cougs and the 1-2 Dogs.
Ooh, you're not real positive on that one. That's not going to go over very well.
Well, you know, those vaunted Dogs, you know, and that championship team that they put together and the totally stinking lousy Cougs, you know. It's interesting. But like,
but remember, I mean, say what you want. It's not like the Cougs have played anybody.
Not yet, but, you know, the test comes, you know, at USC. So mm-hmm. That SC team looks vulnerable. But I want to talk Mariners. What I'm getting tired of, how do you win a baseball game, John?
You score more runs than the other team.
Okay. When you got men on base, what's the idea of putting men on base? Advancing them and scoring them, right?
That is correct.
I am so tired of watching the Mariners having men on first and second, nobody out, late in the game, middle of the game, and because it's Cruz or Seager or Cano, they don't bunt the ball and advance the runners. Last mm-hmm. night, Cruz didn't do it. He grounded out and moved the runners up. But, you know, they say, well, we're paying them we're going to pay these guys those big bucks like that to bunt. We pay them to hit home runs. No, we pay them to win games and score runs. And it takes Cano or somebody to bunt to move the runners up. One game here about a couple weeks ago, you had Haniger on first, or whoever it was. But anyway, next guy up is, I want to say, Cano flies out. Seager or somebody comes up next. It's a nice, hard single. There's a run that would have scored if Cano was bunted. But no. I'm getting so damn tired of it. This costs us games. The best thing I saw the other night was bases loaded, Segura at bat. What'd he do? He tried to bunt down the third baseline. You know, that's the kind of thing I want to see. Mm-hmm. You know, unexpected stuff and creative stuff. You got Segura and you got Gordon. I mean, bunt for base hits, move guys around, force the defense to make plays. I'm tired of watching the big bats just strike out, fly out, and not get any runs.
Yeah, no, I can understand the frustration there because, again, you have to have great frustration with this team because they have so underachieved with their hitting. I mean, 0.7 runs a game less than last year, and this team was supposedly better with acquisitions for hitting?
Well, Seager, if he wants to stay on this team next season, he better learn how to hit to the left side. If they're going to pull that shift on him, I just want to see him just slap the ball down the third baseline. I don't care if he hits home runs, doubles, or whatever. I want to see him get on base. He damn well better learn how to hit down that third baseline or else we're going to trade him. Because mm-hmm. another third baseman out there with just as good a gloves that are willing to hit, you know, that can hit better than him. The other thing I want to say is pass ball, wild pitch, make it live for the batter.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
All right.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-EFN. Jeff Dickerson joining us next to talk Chicago Bear football. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.